Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show, and on the day the Pac-12 rose again, we figured the least we could do is wait until all of Pac-12 After Dark was over, and that is what we have done. Matt Fortuna is joining me. We just watched Stanford crush USC, and Matt, I mean, there's no tarmac. It's a home game. Do they drive Clay Helton to an airport and leave him there?
You know, it's called United Airlines Field at Coliseum. Maybe if you want to get creative, it could be similar in that regard with the airline theme. Wow. I mean, I just filed my Saturday takeaways column. It's 2:24 a.m. Eastern time right now as that game just went final. And my lead was all about what a great day this was for the Pac-12, regardless of what happened after the Oregon game. And I had to severely tinker that. Now, I still think a rising tide lifts all ships. Oregon's win over Ohio State, like notwithstanding anything else that happens in that conference the rest of the season, puts Oregon in prime position to make a run toward the college football playoff, which is something we've not been able to say about that league this early in the season in probably a decade at this point. But man, that was a sobering game. I mean, the final was 42-28, and that is not indicative of at all of what took place. It was a lot of window dressing late. It was 42-13. The Boo Birds were out. Stanford looked like they could barely... Then they left. Stanford, which looked like a barely functional football team a week ago and had me questioning a lot about their future, finally made the right quarterback switch and committed to it. And in doing so, probably completely turned around the prospects for their season and may have delivered the fatal blow to their rival from the Pac-12 South.
Well, okay, so we're going to get to the Oregon game. We need to, because that's a very important result. The fact that the Pac-12 had a legitimate kind of huge out-of-conference win is a big, big deal. That's maybe the biggest win for the conference since Oregon beat Florida State in the first playoff. But we got to talk USC, because I'm wondering, do you need to do this now so you don't give Clay Helton the chance to win just enough to keep his job?
We've talked about this before. I'm of the belief that you have, that I know, that I think Jeremy Foley once quoted was, you know, wait till tomorrow to do what needs to be done today.
What must be done eventually must be done immediately is what Mr. Foley told the Associated Press years and years ago after he'd fired like a tennis coach and a baseball coach.
Oh,
both of which who had gone to national championships and in the past.
I thought that was because I assumed that quote was from when he fired Ron Zook. I did not know that was for Olympic sports, but wow, pretty ruthless. Here's the thing. Like, what do you think you have in Graham Harrell or whomever it is that you would promote for, at this point, almost a full season, at least 10 games? I'm of that belief, but we've also had this song and dance with Clay Helton going on 4 years now, pretty much. He survived. I mean, to give fans a quick timeline rehash about how incredible and how much the dynamics of that place have kept changing. USC loses to Notre Dame in their finale in 2018, finishes 5-7. Lynn Swann, who somehow got the AD job there, puts out a statement saying he's staying, and he pointed to Notre Dame actually as like a reason for how you can turn your program around. Lynn Swann gets fired. The chancellor gets forced out. The Aunt Becky scandal happens. Mike Bone, who by all accounts has done a tremendous job internally there so far.
Aunt Becky to come into this, by the way.
I'm glad she did. If we're talking about USC chaos, I mean, there's no way you can do it without Aunt Becky. Mike Bone gets hired so late in the season in 2019 amid so much other turmoil and turnover at the administrative level of USC that he essentially has no choice. Like, he didn't even have time to, like, evaluate the program and, like, say, hey, maybe 8-4 is not good enough, and what could I do? What's out there? And then last year, kind of like what you just kind of laid out there as a worst case scenario, they go undefeated in the regular season. Now, some of those were cheap wins. Some of those were fluky wins. I would argue that their one loss, the Oregon game, was a big Pac-12 scheduling snafu that screwed over their most important team in the conference. But Larry Scott's no longer here to answer for that. And it's a new day in the Pac-12, as we saw today. There are no excuses this year. Not that there were before. It's USC. But Mike Bone is really invested in that program in a way that his predecessors administratively have not. The recruiting has been on a tremendous uptick. I mean, 2019, when they kept him, their recruiting class was ranked in like the 40s or 50s. It was absurd. That's not the case anymore. The program internally is moving in the right direction. Of course, that only means so much if the guy calling the plays on game day is losing by 28 points at home to a not very good Stanford team. So I don't know. I mean, it's USC. I don't think you can rule anything out because there's never a dull moment with that program. I do think from the president on down, they're trying to take a more uniform professional approach with pretty much everything in terms of the way they do business. And because of that, I tend to think that they're going to err on the side of caution and not fire him after his first loss of the season, as bad as that was. However, I will not rule out the chance that that happens at some point this season if they continue to perform the way they did tonight.
Well, I think we know what that means. USC is going to go on a massive winning streak until they get destroyed by UCLA later in the season. you can see it all unfold. You can see it all lay out. But it is going to be very hot in LA this week because, listen, this is what people have been complaining about. But I think that the scarier thing for USC, the thing that they should pay attention to the most, is the fact that the Coliseum was empty when that game ended. And apathy is much worse than people being mad at you.
I agree completely. I don't think tonight was unique in that regard. Last year, obviously, no fans at all. But like 2019, like I think that was the same risk they took when keeping him 2018, 2019. And I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I can't imagine the season ticket sales for this year are all that better than they were in previous full capacity years. And so I agree with that, but it hasn't changed anything so far. I don't know if tonight would change it in that regard.
Well, we will find out. Who knows? Maybe something has happened by the time you listen to this show as you're cooking your breakfast. But let's get to the good news. Well, it's good news for Stanford. Stanford's also in the Pac-12. That's great news for them. But let's get to the really good news in the Pac-12. A massive win. Oregon goes into Columbus without their two best players, without Kayvon Thibodeau, without Justin Flo. And really, they were out without five defensive starters in Columbus. And they controlled the line of scrimmage. Ohio State did come back, but Ohio State is fantastic and will come back. I was so impressed with the way Oregon dominated this game. I mean, it was the CJ Verdell running the ball, the offensive line just being what we thought it would be. Mario Cristobal has done a great job with that group. Alex Mirabal, their position coach, has been tremendous. But the wonder was, okay, Penei Sewell's gone, and obviously he wasn't playing last season because he opted out. But could they recapture that? And if you look at their recruiting, they've been going and finding really good offensive linemen. But they, you know, that 2019 team had the really old group, and you thought, okay, it may take them a while to get back to this. Nope, they're back to it. And I think that's the part that impresses me the most, because this was going to be a test of how deep is the roster that Mario Cristobal has created. How does it stack up against a team that is a legitimate college football playoff contender? Well, I think we know now. And so, Oregon, everything is out in front of you. Just keep winning. You even got a mulligan now. You could lose one, and you're fine. But just keep going.
You're not segueing from Clay Helton to Mario Cristobal because you think one might take the other's job, do you?
I actually don't. I would. I know that Mario will be a candidate if Helton gets fired, along with probably Matt Campbell. There's probably a few. Luke Fickell.
Well, there are going to be a lot. I mean, it's USC. I think every coach is going to want that job.
So everybody's going to want it. But I honestly, the way Cristobal has his program now, wouldn't leave Oregon if I were him. I'd keep winning at Oregon because I've already proven I can. I already know I have the best talent in the league. And you can keep getting, if you can go to Columbus and beat Ohio State, you can beat anyone in the country. And it doesn't matter who USC hires, you can still beat anyone in the country. And so I would just ride that out until Nick Saban retires. Then I would take that job.
I agree. Today was validation of that. And, you know, I was talking to people around that program the last couple of weeks coming into the season. And, you know, frankly, they were pointing to next year as the year where it was all supposed to come together for Oregon, as far as everything he's recruited toward was building for a big year in 2022 to be like a potential national champion. And based on today, they might be ahead of schedule. I think the most shocking part of today's outcome, aside from the actual outcome, was how routine it looked. I mean, they were the better football team. Like, there was nothing fluky about that game. Like, your only hope, you're hoping for Oregon to do something stupid. And Lord knows they've done that before in big games. But, like, that was the only way they were going to lose this game, which is incredible to say when you're playing a team that we all had as a national title contender in Ohio State. Now, I saw the Buckeyes in person last week. That defense had a lot of work to do. They got most of that secondary back, however, this week. And I mean, Minnesota and Oregon are different programs, but I think they're both similarly built along the offensive line. And when they're playing a team as explosive offensively as Ohio State, they become even more risk averse than maybe they naturally are, because they just want to play keep away. And we saw, you know, even on not his best day, CJ Stroud was capable of getting the ball into his playmakers' hands and making magic happen with the snap of a finger. But I gotta say, Joe Moorhead called a phenomenal game. I think we all
Anthony Brown, by the way, because you know, here's the thing with an RPO heavy offense like they run under Joe Moorhead, the quarterback has to make the correct choices too. And Anthony Brown was awesome.
So here's I was gonna get to Anthony Brown. I put this in my takeaways column. I was talking to someone a couple weeks ago who said, we're previewing Oregon season, and he said, by the way, you know, Urban Meyer and Steve Adazio, as we all know, are very, very close. He even got him his job that he's probably going to lose this season at Colorado State. They lost to Vanderbilt today.
They lost to Vandy.
Urban Meyer was at a Boston College practice a couple of years ago, and he said, yeah, I'm paraphrasing here, you know, who the hell is that quarterback? That guy is phenomenal. Look at that athlete. And it was Anthony Brown. And that's saying a lot, knowing who it's coming from. But it's also like it's validating and rewarding for Anthony Brown, because like Boston College was pretty darn good when he was healthy. I mean, I think they got out to a 7-2 start in 2018 and got a national ranking and got College Game Day to come for the Clemson game before he got hurt that game. He had two season-ending injuries and then a coaching change at Boston College. And like, I'm not gonna lie, I covered the ACC pretty damn closely. I completely forgot about him when he transferred from Boston College. He was in the portal for a long time. There was talks of him even coming back to be a reserve for Jeff Hafley. He ends up going to Oregon and being reserve, and they end up liking him so much by the end of last year that Tyler Shock, the starter at Oregon last year, ends up transferring out. And here's Anthony Brown orchestrating the biggest and best upset we've seen in the Pac-12 in, I don't know, a decade or so. I mean, it was Oregon's first win as a 2-touchdown underdog since I think 1997 was the stat I saw. It was, no one saw this coming outside of Eugene. Absolutely no one.
No. And Mario Cristobal after the game said, hey, it's the thing you always kill me for and say it's boring. It's the process. And, you know, look, he's tried to take what he learned working at Alabama and also what he knows from his time at Miami as a player and tried to translate that to Oregon. And I think he has. I think, you know, they've gotten to the point where they have that mentality of dominate every play, you know, don't worry about the scoreboard, that sort of thing. And that's how you win a game like that, because Ohio State's scary sometimes. I mean, the way mm-hmm. they can just march down the field and strike back so quickly, a lot of teams, even if you catch a lead on them, just can't hold it because they get intimidated. They get shocked by how fast Ohio State can score. It didn't seem to bother Oregon at all.
No, I mean, that again, it was remarkable for how unremarkable it looked in real time as it was unfolding. Like, if you look at that box score from afar and you see Oregon's up 7-0 in the second quarter, you think, oh, you know, Ohio State's screwing around a little bit. Oregon got a fluky touchdown, whatever. No, they won by 7 and they were up by 14 most of that game. Like, it was – it completely changed – we'll get to Ohio State later. It completely changed the bar for Oregon in the Pac-12, in my opinion. At least for Oregon, which if they make the playoff, that'll be good for the Pac-12. Like, there's – you talk about how they could afford a mulligan. The Pac-12, for as much as we knock it, has been very deep and has had a lot of parity. Everyone points to the Arizona State game in 2019 when Jaden Daniels went off and they beat Oregon late in the year in prime time to end Oregon's playoff hopes. And I said at the time when it happened in week one, and I stand by it, Oregon was not eliminated in the playoff that night. They were eliminated when they let Auburn off the hook in week one in a game they completely gave away, because there's not been an undefeated Pac-12 team in Pac-12 play since Chip Kelly's Oregon team in 2010. It is damn hard to run the table in that league. And you don't have to do that when you've got a win at Ohio State under your resume. You get a mulligan. And that's, I can't tell you the last time we've been able to say that about the Pac-12.
Well, let's talk Buckeyes. Does this loss lessen your confidence in their ability to win the league? Do you think a Penn State could jump up and get them? Do you think a Wisconsin could jump, or an Iowa? Iowa's been great.
That's the one I was waiting for you to say. I mean, Iowa's looked damn good so far. I saw them in person last week, and I was a believer in that defense after 30 minutes of watching Phil Parker's boys get after it. I was a little less certain on that offense, and I'm, you know, jury's still a little bit out on them. But say it, you know, Kirk Ferentz knows how to light a fire under these guys. I mean, they've won 8 straight games dating back to last year. They get off to that 0-2 start, and they were lights out pretty much the rest of the year. And when you look at their wins during this 8-game streak, top 10 win at Iowa State, winning on the road at Penn State. I think Wisconsin was ranked when they beat them last year. They've been on something of a tear here going back to midway through last season. And, you know, I think all of us, fans, media, you know, college football, like, we get so wrapped up in what we think we know about these programs. Like, Iowa's Iowa. They're going to go 8-4 this year. They'll win a game they shouldn't. They'll lose a game they shouldn't. But look at Iowa State. Oh, my God. This is so cool. Like, Matt Campbell. Like, how fun is he? Like, I think we get so obsessed with these shiny new toys. And, look, Matt Campbell deserves a lot of the hype. I don't mean this to knock him. At the end of the day, Kirk Ferentz is undefeated against him. And he does it the same way every time. Iowa has won the turnover battle 9-0 in their last 5 games against Iowa State. That is absurd. Absolutely absurd. They come to play for this game every single time. To Iowa State's credit, they haven't let it derail their season the way a lot of other teams could with a big early season rivalry loss. But I've really liked what I've seen out of Iowa so far. And obviously haven't loved what I've seen out of Ohio State so far. I thought they were the best of the Big Ten, but still a step below true national title contender status entering this year. There were just too many questions on that defense for me. And Stroud, while is extremely promising, he's still only a redshirt freshman and is not Justin Fields quite yet. And I think you need to allow some time for a guy like that to grow. But we'll see. I mean, they have not lost a regular season game in the Ryan Day era, which is crazy to say. I mean, Ryan Day was as pointed as could be throughout preseason by basically saying, like, you're not allowed to lose here. End of story. And he said something to that effect last week against Minnesota when Minnesota had him on the ropes for about 3 quarters. It was just like, we won, we'll take it. Like losing is not allowed here. And they just lost very, very early. And all their goals are still theoretically still in front of them, but it's going to come with a lot more drama, intense, and angst than we've been used to in Columbus the past 3 years.
We'll be right back after these words.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So let's talk about another result that we were not expecting. I think had Arkansas beaten Texas on a last second field goal in a tight game, okay, that would have been something we would have been in the realm of possibility going into Saturday. To beat them 40-21 and completely dominate them at the line of scrimmage was not something we expected. And look, I watched a lot of Arkansas football last year. I did a huge story on Sam Pittman last year. I believe in the guy, but I didn't see this coming at all. I mean, this was an utter domination of Texas. And, you know, Ari and I talk a lot on this podcast about how Texas and USC feel like the same program a lot of the time. And it feels almost like they lost the same game on Saturday night.
I can see that. You can argue which is more demoralizing. I think USC fans are so ready for a change that they're just kind of whatever at this point. I think the good vibes of week one of the Sark era quickly wore off. It's funny to me that, you know, for all the attention we focus on Texas and, oh, it's a rebuild. Are they back? Are they this or that? I mean, it was just, what, 5 years? I'm looking at the SEC story now. 2,177 days ago, to be exact. Six years ago, I'm sorry, when Arkansas essentially did that same thing to Texas in, what was it?
Borderline Erotic.
Yeah, Borderline. What bowl was it, though? AutoZone?
That was the Texas Bowl.
Texas Bowl.
That was the Borderline Erotic Texas Bowl.
The Borderline Erotic. I remember that. And it actually came up recently because I saw Brett Bielema before he saying the seventh inning stretch for Liberty Field. And it was the week Texas was going to the SEC. And he said, by the way, for the record, I have a broken finger from my playing days. I was not doing horns down during that press conference. That's just how my fingers are aligned. But the media and the photographers could not get enough of it. They ran for 333 yards tonight against Texas. And again, I know it's year one of a new regime, but it's Texas. It's year two of a regime at Arkansas, whose previous regime went even shorter than the Tom Herman regime at Texas did. I mean, the Charlie Strong Brett Bielema game was, let's see, two coaches ago for each, I think, right?
Correct.
Morris, yes. Was anyone for Morris after Bielema? No, right?
Nope.
And then Charlie to Tom to Steve Sarkisian. So, like, at some point, like, just man up and play. Like, I don't know what to say. Like, it's just Sam Pittman had those boys ready last year, you know? Like, they're. The way that happened was very surprising.
And Arkansas, like, if you watched Ole Miss this year and if you watched Mississippi State against NC State on Saturday, like, Arkansas still may be the sixth or seventh team in the West, in the SEC West. Like, by the way, Texas, this is what you're getting into.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
this is what you've signed up for now.
The SEC chance route, I don't know if you saw some of the Twitter videos they put out after. They were gold.
Oh, yeah. A lot of horns down, too. Absolutely. Uh-oh. Tons of horns down. I don't think the SEC office is going to care much about horn. Like, there won't be a special, you know, convocation of the SEC athletic directors to talk horns down and what the officials are going to do about it. They're just not going to care.
Yeah. I wonder how they're going to react to no longer being able to call their own shots in the league and being probably on the furthest end of not being.
I'm pretty sure they don't call any shots in the Big 12 right now. So it's not really. It's not going to feel
2 months ago,
right?
No,
now.
But beforehand, yeah. By the way, I was misreading that game. It was 2014, Advocare V100, Texas Bowl. I think I said AutoZone, 31-7 Arkansas. Yeah, that was the immortal borderline erotic game. I mean, Thank God we have Brett Bielema back, even though his team doesn't look so hot 3 games in at Illinois.
But. I mean, I gotta say this one was sexier than the borderline erotic game. The borderline erotic game was boring. This one was hot.
It was hot. I mean, it was at a road venue. Fans storming the field. That's always better than a stale bowl game. I mean, it was a cool environment. It was cool to see. I mean, it's cool to see Arkansas, which had about as bad of a 2-year experience as you could probably experience in a 2-year coaching era under Chad Morris, almost snap their fingers and look really damn tough in the trenches and look ready to compete every single week, regardless of who they're playing. That's not something, as much as I love the hire, that's not something I had any reason to expect would happen this soon. And to the Hogs' credit, they're doing it. And they gave everyone, and I think two conferences, plenty to laugh at tonight with their domination of Texas.
This is a day where the team that dominated, and look, the team that dominates the line of scrimmage always wins, but the teams that traditionally that's their MO, they actually did it today. Arkansas,
you don't get Peacock, well, but we'll get to that.
we will get to that. I do get Peacock, but I was busy. But that's what Arkansas wants to do. That's what Oregon wants to do. That's what Iowa wants to do. And Iowa did it to Iowa State again. You kind of went down the litany of why Kirk Ferentz has been so successful against Iowa State. But think about this is probably the biggest game at Jack Trice Stadium since the 2011 Oklahoma State game, which, by the way, I was at, and going into it, nobody realized mm-hmm. it was going to be such a big game. This was College Game Day was there. This is everything they ever wanted. This was their coronation. And then it turns out to be exactly the same thing all over again.
But just quick addendum to our last thing. The Texas Bowl final rushing yard stats were 191-2 in favor of Arkansas. So I don't know what was worse, that or tonight. Back That's to the too. Great state of Iowa. I mean, it's crazy to think that these teams had never met as ranked opponents, and here they were meeting as top 10 opponents. You got Game Day. You've got Reese Davis on the call. You've got this incredible hype machine behind Iowa State this year. Preseason top 10 team coming off arguably their best season ever. And it literally played out, I wouldn't even say exactly as the rest of them. It played out worse than the rest of them. I mean, the rest of them, they're usually in it. This one was over really by the start of the fourth quarter. Brock Purdy got benched. Did not see that happening. I struggle with this one. Maybe as a media member, like I do genuinely love Matt Campbell. I think he's done an incredible job there. I think he can do well, probably any job in the country. I just think we get so like, I don't know if it's just the playoff is like, it's playoff fatigue. It's boredom of seeing the same teams every year. We try so hard to hype up so many new teams and coaches who are nice and different. Like Tom Allen, my God, like he's a fine coach. Nothing against him. He seems like a nice guy. Has anyone got a more of a benefit of the doubt coming into the season than Indiana? Will Healy tweets funny locker room.
If you were listening to this podcast, you heard I was going to crush some dreams. I said it before game one. And I said both first 2 weeks they're going to crush dreams, and sure enough, they are crushing dreams.
Will Healy, again, I think he's done a good job at Charlotte. I'm not the least bit surprised he beat Duke, but because he's nice to the media and tweets funny locker room videos, we're treating this like it's the greatest upset in the world last week. Iowa State, Matt Campbell's not as like out there, but he by all accounts, a really genuinely good guy who's humble roots and has made a Big 12 contender out of what was a Big 12 laughing stock for so long. And again, I think he actually does deserve all the credit he's gotten. But the idea of them being a playoff team.
He wins like 9 games a year at Iowa State. He deserves all of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't see them as like a Big 12 contender coming this year. Last year was the year to win the Big 12. They completely screwed up in the Big 12 title game against Oklahoma, and they will never have that good of a chance again. And you'll never convince me otherwise unless they actually do it this year. Like, last year was the year they blew it. Like, and maybe that sounds harsh, but if you want to be talked about as a top 10 team and a CFP contender, you don't throw 3 interceptions against a mediocre Oklahoma team. Like, Oklahoma is no longer mediocre. Like, they're really damn good, maybe national title good. And as we saw from Iowa State today, more of the same against Iowa. Like, they are not national title good. They're probably not CFP or Big 12 title good. I just think the hype machine just got way too out of control there.
It could be worse.
Yes.
It could be Florida State. It could be Florida State who lost to Jacksonville State. And I want to play you the call from the end of this game. I'll set the scene. They are down three. They've got about 55 yards to go. It's 4th and 10. And there's, you know, very little time on the clock. You know this is going to be the last play. Guy catches the ball about the 19-yard line. There's two Seminoles there waiting to tackle him. And unfortunately, neither one does. And he makes it. And so we'll give you the radio call from this in a second. Let me get this thing nice and queued up, because it is everything you would ever want it to be in this sort of radio call. So here we go.
Snap to Cooper. Looking down the field. He's got a man. Caught it. He's free. Phil Y'all Johnson at the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! There are no flags. Touchdown pass on the final snap of the game. Jacksonville State has won it.
That's what I want.
Yes.
From my home team radio call. Well, they were the visiting team, but yes, that's what I want from the radio call. From the campus team radio call, I want screaming. I want barely intelligible. I want just to have no idea what's going on. That's what I want.
You and me both. And it's funny because I watched that in real time. That was a game that I'm trying to think what I had on at the time. I had USC on at the time. I had the Holy War on. I think I had
BYU Utah. On. Yep.
And I was like, oh, I wonder what's going on in the Florida State game. They were down 7-0 earlier, and I see they're up 17-7, and I put it on. And in the same vein as Oregon, although obviously a different game, the most amazing part to me, and obviously that call shows differently, but watching that game on TV, it was not a Hail Mary. Like, it was a fairly routine 59-yard pass.
I don't know that Zarek Cooper could have gotten into the end zone. It was a long way.
It was
you would have had to throw it like 70 yards in the air.
It was the most routine, incredible play for an incredible upset. Okay, like, we're done here. We'll go home.
Well,
like,
I want to shout out one guy though, Ahmad Edwards. He's a redshirt sophomore receiver from Alabaster, Alabama, who threw the greatest block of his life. I guarantee you. I've not seen his other blocks, but I can guarantee you this was the greatest block of his life, because there was one Florida State defender that had a chance to stop that touchdown, and Ahmad Edwards erased him at the goal line.
Maybe that's true, but there were still two who had the receiver in his grasp, and it looked like they just had no interest in tackling whatsoever. Like, I just could, and it, you know, it's a grass field, it's moist, it's night. I'm just waiting for him to, like, maybe slip up on his own, but, like, it was just, like, I'm not even going to call it a Hail Mary. The game-winning touchdown pass was, like, in some ways the least remarkable part about how Jacksonville State won that game. Like, if you watch the fourth quarter of that game, Florida State, like, God bless their fans. Like, I just, the ESPN win probability, I think, got up to 98% at one point. It was in the mid-90s most. It should have been at 99 the whole time. Florida State was up 10, had fourth and goal at the 3 with 9:49 left and couldn't convert. They then allowed a 97-yard touchdown drive that featured two third and longs, the second of which had an interception that was taken off the board because of targeting. Then they only go 19 yards on their own and punt the ball back with 1:32 left, and then give up. Just an absolutely baffling play. Like, if you're watching it live, they go straight to the ACC Network studio, and poor E.J. Manuel's there with a facepalm. And Mark Richt is like rubbing.
Comforted by Mark Richt.
Yes. Another no. And it was it was just baffling. Like, I don't – and, you know, they were America's team 6 days ago. And now, when are they going to win a game? Syracuse. I mean, they're not going to beat Wake Forest. They're not good. They're not that good, I don't think.
It's bad. And all of the good vibes from the Notre Dame game are gone.
Yes.
And I'm starting to wonder if we watched a Notre Dame-Texas game in the Notre Dame-Florida State game. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, cynical conspiracy theory. Ready? Notre Dame being good Universal NBC team members saying we're going to sell some Peacock subscriptions by keeping Toledo in this game.
I mean, I tweeted this during the game. It reminded me of the launch of the Big Ten Network when no one got it and Appalachian State beat Michigan State or beat Michigan, excuse me. And then 2018 Army had Oklahoma on the ropes, went to overtime. That game was on pay-per-view. And so I'll be very curious.
We watched it around some guy's foot on Periscope.
The Michigan game, I remember watching. That was my first game. Actually, comes full circle with Mario Cristobal. My first game as a freshman at Penn State, they beat Mario Cristobal's first FIU team, 59-0.
Yep.
And the concession stand TVs had Big Ten Network, and that's where we all crowded around watching Michigan. Those were like viral videos before viral videos were a thing. Me and our colleague Pete Sampson had this exact same discussion on the Shamrock Pod, which is currently posted after the Toledo game today. It was quite a day for Notre Dame, to say the least. I mean, it's I'll be very curious to see. We'll get ratings. We'll get numbers. I want to see like the by quarters ratings and subscriptions, like how many people signed up in the fourth quarter. Most of them probably don't care about Notre Dame one way or another, but wanted to pay to see them lose because like they should have lost today, which is crazy to say.
And how many of them will forget to cancel because they won't, they subscribe saying I'm going to cancel this before the 30 days is up. I bet they don't. Not all of them.
They might have tricked me. I got an email because I signed up for free for the spring game, which was on Peacock. And it said, enter. I think the code was Notre Dame. Big secret there. Enter code Notre Dame for $250 a month. But you had to sign up for 3 months. So I'm $750 broker for it. But I have it through the rest of the season for whatever I may need that for.
All right. Before we leave Notre Dame, we do have to point out that Jack Cohn, the quarterback for Notre Dame, apparently dislocated his middle finger on his throwing hand, got it popped back into place between plays, and then threw a touchdown pass to Michael Meyer to win the game.
The addendum to that Brian Kelly shared afterward might be even more incredible. They ran a 2-point conversion after that, which was very risky because they were only up one, and it was basically the Philly special. Avery Davis, a receiver, former Notre Dame backup quarterback, threw it to Kyron Williams for two. Kelly said Cohn was the first option to catch it on that play. So he not only threw the game-winning touchdown pass right after having his finger jolted back into its socket, he was supposed to catch the game, the 2-point conversion right after that. That game had a little bit of everything, a little bit too much if you're an Irish fan, but that game had a little bit of everything. Somehow they're 2-0. And Pete and I also, much like you said, thought maybe like right down to the Texas is back, Joe Tess on the call, Sunday night juju from 5 years ago, like starting to get a lot of those vibes from Notre Dame.
Could be. Now, a team that we weren't sure was going to be as good as last year, that may actually be as good as last year, maybe even better, BYU. BYU took Utah to the woodshed. I realize Utah scored late to make it kind of close, but that was a beatdown. And that is BYU's first win against Utah since 2009. They were partying in Provo, such as it is. Not the usual party favors that most of us would have, but they were on the field. That was loud. That stadium was rocking. So, I mean, it was very impressive what Kalani Sitake and his team did, because the thought was, okay, Zach Wilson's gone. You had this super special quarterback, and now you don't. There's going to be a drop-off. I'm not sure there's been a drop-off.
No, there hasn't so far when they kept showing that stat during the game. I was shocked they had not won that game since 2009. They've been a better program than one that loses to its rival 12 years in a row. But they absolutely dominate night. They're now 2-0 against the Pac-12. They play another ranked Pac-12 team next week in Arizona State. And you know who they close with? At USC. That will be interesting, given everything we just said.
Oh yeah, I don't know that Clay Helton's going to be there, because if UCLA looks like it has looked the first few weeks. If he's around by the time they play UCLA, he's probably not afterward.
Yeah, I mean, you look at how tough BYU looked today, how strong they were in the trenches. I mean, rarely does Utah get out-Utahed, for lack of a better term. That was a really impressive performance, coming on the heels of another impressive performance last week in Vegas against Arizona. Great weekend for, and you're in one of those cities right now, the four Big 12 editions. They all get in on Friday. They all win today, two of them against FCS teams. But in BYU's case, yep, and in Houston's case, albeit only against Rice, both looked really, really good. Houston looked like a completely different team from the one that lost last week against Texas Tech.
Yeah, the Bayou Bucket. I was sitting in Dana Holgerson's pool house, and that's the way it goes. Yeah, big celebration, obviously. Yeah, UCF had Bethune-Cookman, which they better win that game. But yeah, everybody who ascended to the Big 12, feeling very happy, very happy on the field. And I talked to Chris Pesman, the Houston athletic director, before the game, and he's like, man, we better not lose this. I'm like, they're not going to rescind the invitation if you lose. It's going to be okay. But they came out and put the hammer down. We still haven't talked about the most amazing thing that happened on Saturday, which was at the Miami-Appalachian State game. Oh. I don't know how this happened. I still am unclear. But we've all seen the hang in there, baby poster with the cat hanging from a branch. Well, that happened. There was a cat hanging from a stadium rafter at Hard Rock Stadium. I don't know how the cat got there. I'm not sure I want to know. But it was hanging. And then it lost grip with one paw. And then it just kept hanging there. And then it lost the grip with another paw. And you hear everyone scream. But beneath them, there are a bunch of people holding an American flag. And the cat falls into the American flag and is saved. And they pick it up and hold it up Lion King style.
Like they're Mufasa passing it around, holding the like young it was a trophy. Simba
up to the crowd. And it peed all over them while that happened.
Yeah, have you seen the movie Mr. Deeds? They remind me of the scene where he's a volunteer firefighter and there's a burning building and he climbs up into like the fourth story and there are like 12 cats on fire and he throws each one of them into the street and someone catches each one. And it ends with Rob Schneider playing the delivery man from Big Daddy. It was that in real life. Like, I see it going around online. I see a bunch of people, our colleagues in Slack, posting about it. I see Manny saying, I'm writing about it, Manny of our Miami writer. And at the time, I'm so occupied with whatever it was I was writing or watching at the time, I thought, you know what, I'll get back to that later. And I read the story that Manny wrote, and I recommend you all read it as well. And it was phenomenal. Great, like, boots on the ground journalism, like going to the heart of the story and talking to the heroes of the story.
Is Boots the cat's name now?
We'll have to do a follow-up. Manny will have to do a follow-up with that cat. The story was great. But then you watch the videos embedded with it, and holy crap. Like, even knowing how it ended, and frankly, hating cat. Hating
You're
cats and loving dogs, I will
cats.
Personally.
Terrified!
Like, I had more anxiety intention watching those clips when I knew there was a happy ending than I did watching any game today. And it was just absolutely insane.
That it felt like the cat was dangling from one paw.
It looks like a spider
for
web.
Like five minutes. It was probably really like 5 seconds.
The fact that it happened in Miami, like where else, right? I mean, you live in that state. I mean, it just you can't make it up.
It is wild. But this is the sport that we choose to love. The stupidest sport in the world that is also the greatest sport in the world. Matt Fortuna, thank you so much for staying up late past Pac-12 after dark. God, I love college football. It was an amazing Saturday. Can't wait to do it again next week. Thanks so much.